In the modern era of the 12-hour news cycles and 140-character diplomacy, one may very well wonder who benefits from a generation of distracted voters and news consumers. While the mainstream media spends days analyzing whether or not the president actually declared war on Little Rocket Man via his Twitter feed, surely something more ominous is actually happening behind the scenes that the powers that be would rather us not notice, right? Well, one convincing thesis is that the modern military entertainment complex is playing this shell game with us to hide the alarming state of our world economy, or perhaps its own hidden agenda for changes on the Korean Peninsula. To discuss just how this nuclear standoff has devolved to its current state and what we really should be paying attention to, Sean Stone was joined by British historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling.
First of all, Kim Jong-un is obviously getting help with miniaturizing nuclear weapons, if that's what he's doing. There's some outside help going on. I'd like to hear a little bit more from the mainstream press investigating that. But most importantly, it's obvious what needs to happen is there needs to be no exercises of invading North Korea. That needs to stop. And then perhaps we will have an agreement from the North Koreans to stop escalating the nuclear program. This is just common sense. And I don't understand why the major people around the world and the mainstream press don't just simply put this constantly to the various leaders concerned, because I think that's what everybody wants. The other thing is this is a big distraction away from effectively a war which is being waged on domestic populations now here in the West, and it's not a sort of jackboots in the street type war. It's much more of an economic war. Our whole idea of austerity is, I mean, it's just appalling. There is actually, I think, a spiritual dimension to it. It's not just economic misfortune. This is an attack on people's freedoms. There's a spiritual dimension to war and to the whole child sex abuse scandal, I think, with, you know, kind of normalizing abusive relationships by governments on people in the West. And things like North Korea capture their headlines, get everyone distracted from engaging in the political process at home to get rid of these abusive politicians we've got in the West, because we've got very little real choice in our democracies. We either get, the bully on the left or the bully on the right.
What is it that you actually think North Korea is working to do? I mean, we certainly know that they have a longstanding relationship with China, as well as Russia in the old days to a certain extent. But what is North Korea actually trying to achieve in this situation?
They just don't want to be invaded. They don't want regime change. You know, this is one of the reasons why they've decided, and obviously that's being threatened permanently now. And I don't think it's true to say that the tensions haven't been ramped up since the last couple of years, because if you go and talk to people at the University of Guam, they'll tell you that they were used to this sort of silly rhetoric from, well, I say silly, I mean, it's threatening nuclear war rhetoric from the North Korean side. This kind of happened quite a bit, but they're not used to it from the United States. That's new. Trump has really upped the ante by talking about wiping out North Korea, this kind of thing, like there's only going to be only one solution, these kinds of threats. But again, like I say, it's a distraction, really. We've had a complete collapse of capitalism since 2008. Capitalism died, right? If people don't realize that, they need to realize that now. In 2008, ever since, the whole dodo of the economic system has been being propped up, you know, virtually a sort of like a two-dimensional screen now, rather than anything really meaningful to it. The dodo has been propped up by quantitative easing. This is just printing money out of nowhere and injecting it into places which will help make it look like there's an illusion of some capitalism still working, but it isn't. We need to really be thinking, Sean, you know, right across the Atlantic. I'd like to propose a new special relationship across the Atlantic, really, to look at a post-capitalist world, because this lot is coming down like a house of cards, and we need to be ready for that. We need to have our vision sorted for monetary reform is obvious, land reform, for a post-industrial world and a post-capitalist world where resources are shared out fairly and we've got social justice. So, you know, I think that's really what's behind a lot of this saber rattling. I'm not sure that there's any real likelihood of nuclear war, although, of course, that is a possibility. I think when you get elites who are really on the edge, I mean, that is to say that it looks like the facade is crumbling, the mainstream media are failing to convince people anymore, At that point, I think that there may be a lashing out of some sort, but certainly the crash is coming. Whether war two is another question.
Well, you talk about the austerity programs that have been implemented. Certainly in the U.S., we see it in a different form. We don't have that level of how do you say it? We haven't seen austerity from the government as much as we've seen certainly loss of people's overall assets and net worth. We've seen a lot of sort of stagnation, let's say, going back to even pre-2008, but certainly post-2008, it's been very stagnant for many people. But what is the austerity looking like in Europe?
Well, certainly in Britain, it's fair to say it's probably worse than in other parts of Europe. I mean, Greece and Spain have been pretty awful. But what's happened is we've had an economic collapse. That is to say, most of the people who are employed, and there are, of course, millions and millions who are unemployed, cannot get work. Most of those who are at the bottom half are simply not, I mean, they're going out to work every day, but there's simply not enough money to make ends meet. I mean, you know, yes, you can just about maybe pay the rent, but you can't have a life on top of that, and you need money to have a life. So I think this is really a deliberate thing. We've got this thing at the moment in Britain being introduced called universal credit. I remember when they first talked about this a few years ago, it was talked about as a kind of something from a sci-fi film, the kind of futuristic money system where the state or the system tells you how much money you've got and you have to just kind of trust them. I mean, they're moving away from any kind of idea of giving people something of real value, and it's just basically a chitty on a little screen somewhere. And of course, with the move towards electronic money, stopping checks, this kind of thing, stopping the use of that, it means that people can be just cut off like that. You know, anybody can just suddenly find, oh, my money is not working. It's very powerful. The banks have got a lot of power, and they've been taking it away from governments who simply haven't been using the ability that they do have, if they can be bothered, to start to regulate properly the money system. I mean, we've got effectively the banksters, I think, are a kind of feudal oligarchy, really. It's the kings and the dukes of the old days, and they are not subject to any of the laws that we are. They're way above the law. They can almost do what they want. We've seen no prosecutions except one just a few months ago of one guy from Barclays, a senior guy, over Qatar. And that was just a side issue, really, to the Saudis and the Americans and the British having a go at Qatar. So, you know, it's not a realistic situation. Law and order isn't really working for the super rich, but what we've seen is austerity for everyone else. So it's getting, I suppose it's like a kind of normalizing abuse, really. That's what's going on, an enforced destitution, and literally kicking people out in the street. We've heard recently about this universal credit they're bringing in here, causing something like 20,000, forcing 20,000 families with children into poverty, and yet the government's still trying to press ahead with it anyway. So we need to obviously move beyond that, because we've got abusive governments at the moment, and you know, that's no good.
Now Trump is calling for more nuclear weapons, presumably for, you know, a potential threat from North Korea. Meanwhile, he's talking about destroying the nuclear deal with Iran, at the same time that we have Congress and others pushing for more escalation against Russia, who's considered another enemy. It seems that the enemies are all around. Is this really just fueling the overall agenda of the military-industrial complex and the bankers that finance it?
Yeah, of course it is. And actually, those are the real feudal barons. And this, I think, is the big betrayal of our generation, Sean. It's the mainstream media. I don't know about in other parts of the world, but in Britain, it started here really in the 1980s under Thatcher with the sacking of a guy called Alistair Milne as the BBC Director General, whose son, Seamus Milne, is now the Labour Party Director of Communications. But by getting rid of him, and at the time it was done by Victor Rothschild with the cooperation of Margaret Thatcher, the media has really become like, it's becoming like now, even since 2000 and 9/11, even worse. It's becoming like the spearhead of the war machine. The big lies are spewed out by mainstream press in the West, whether it's somebody's killing their own people, whether it's a sarin gas attack that's supposed to be from one side, but actually it's not, it's from another side. Or perhaps it's actually just a confected video which has been made up with millions of pounds that the Pentagon has been spending giving the money to Bell Pottinger. I mean, we just don't know nowadays what to believe. And this echoes very, very strongly to me of the beginning of the Second World War. In 1939, the excuse that the Nazis had for invading Poland was this thing called the Gliwice incident, where what they'd done is they got a load of Polish people and they dressed them up in Polish, I think they were concentration camp victims within Germany anyway, but what they did is they dressed them up in Polish uniforms and gave them lethal injections, many of them, and then just photographed them in a German base in Germany. And they said, oh, these Polish soldiers have invaded us. Even the New York Times, Sean, printed that story and said, oh, isn't it terrible? The Poles have invaded Germany. They're going to have to, you know, invade them back. Something's going to have to happen. So the excuse that was used to kick off World War II with the invasion of Poland was also aided and abetted by the New York Times and the mainstream press. So I think that's back where we are now. And it's easy if you really trained, I suppose, like I, someone who's worked in the mainstream press, to see just how biased our press is.